In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Nick Shaw, CEO and co-founder of RP Strength, IFBB Pro, host of the RP Strength podcast, and author of Fit for Success. Nick and I speak about training differences for beginners versus advanced, core benefits of maintenance, and what kind of mindset we need to be successful with anything. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Nick, and please, if you enjoy this show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Nick. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Nick Shaw, CEO and co-founder of RP Strength, IFBB Pro, host of the RP Strength podcast, and author of Fit for Success. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Great to be here.
My absolute pleasure, and I'm really, really excited to talk about all things lifting and nutrition and so on. But before we do, I would love to hear a little bit more about you and how you got to where you are today.
So I have always been interested in lifting and fitness, going back to I probably started lifting when I was about 13 years old, something like that. I had a brother who's 4 years older than me, so saw him training for sports in high school and was like, oh, that's really cool. And so that's really how I first got it started. I was always interested in sports, in lifting, you know, all things around, hey, how do you get better to be a better athlete, all that. And went to school at the University of Michigan, where I studied sports management and met at the time just another guy in the gym in the weight room at the College of University of Michigan, and that is Dr. Mike. So a lot of people know him. He's the face of our RP YouTube channel. So yeah, we met in the student weight room at the University of Michigan. We were both, for lack of a better term, we were both just a couple of meatheads. So we'd like to hopefully think a little bit more about lifting. He was an early mentor for me, and because he was a few years ahead of me in school and had maybe a little bit more thought and structure around lifting. And I just loved lifting. And so he got me competing in powerlifting and did first ever show in bodybuilding way back in 2008, I believe. And he coached me through that. And I just kind of knew that that was something that I wanted to do. We both were personal trainers for a while in New York after graduating from college. And that was technically the start of RP because we were both working together. And then he left to go back to school to get his PhD in exercise science, sport physiology, actually. And we were sort of just referring people back and forth to one another because he was working with people online. I was training people in person. And we thought, well, why don't we actually just start one business together? And that was actually the official formation of, at the time, Renaissance Periodization. Realized, hey, no one can actually spell that or pronounce it or anything like that, including ourselves. So we switched it over to RP Strength. I mean, fairly recently, we kind of always went by that as well. So yeah, that's kind of the TLDR, the short version.
Awesome. And yeah, I love just all the information that you guys put out, whether that be some great lifting videos on YouTube or educational things on your Instagram or your book for that matter as well. And yeah, there are so many avenues to take this conversation down to, but where I would love to start off with is something that I saw on your Instagram, and that was a post on the training differences for beginners versus advanced lifters.
Yeah. Oh
So
boy,
maybe you can get a little bit into that, what that practically means.
Yeah, it's really funny. I didn't think that was like a controversial post. And I actually have a guy, his name's Dylan. He's great. He like helps make all the memes. And, you know, that one just happened to be, I think, taken from a recent podcast that Dr. Mike and I had done on the RP one. And, you know, apparently it like caught a bunch of flack out there from people that said you can't like train with higher reps. And I didn't even know that was a thing. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. So we can maybe dive a little bit into that. But I guess if you're a beginner, that's here's what it boils down to. In our opinion, it's probably best to start with like the basic compound lifts, you know, squat, deadlift, presses, rows, lunges, things like that. And it maybe seems slightly counterintuitive at first because you're like, well, why wouldn't you just want to use machines if you're a beginner? And like, you can. I'm not, you know, just speaking on averages, right? Like you totally can use machines. It's not like set in stone one way or the other. But if you're new to lifting and if you can teach someone the proper form and technique on the basic compounds, well, one, that's going to have tons of carryover just into normal everyday life. You can do set of 10 body weight squats, you know, no assistance, anything like that. You're not going to have any problems getting up and down, moving around, going up and down stairs and all that, right? So there's tons of just carryover for normal people living everyday life, especially as you get a little bit older. So there's probably a good case to be made for that. Also, if you just know good form on those lifts, being able to execute machine lifts is going to be a lot easier. So that was one part of it. The other part was, if you are a beginner, it's probably a good idea to train in like the 5 to 10 rep range, because you're just not used to and as you get more advanced, you can start to use a wider range of rep schemes because you're more advanced. If you take someone that's never really lifted before, is fairly new to it, and you start having them do like 15 to 20 reps, who knows if that's a good weight for them? They might not even understand like what reps in reserve is. If you tell them, hey, like stop a couple reps short of failure, they don't even know what that means. They're just like, they just want to lift. And so if you use a moderate weight, something they could probably do for like 8 to 10 reps, that's probably a pretty good start. But as you get more advanced, you've been training for, over 5 years, something like that, the rep schemes that you use can become more complex and more complicated. So you could be someone that starts to train up in the 15, 20, 20 plus rep range because you kind of know what that feels like. And it's not fun training in that high rep. Like it really hurts. It really burns a lot. And so if you take someone that's new to that, oh, they might have a really hard time with that. And it may just be like, they're like, yo, you know what? Screw this. This isn't fun. This isn't pleasant. This hurts a lot. I'm not going to do it. So there's probably a little bit of merit to that as well. And then I believe the other one was, if you are newer to training, you probably want to stay not super close to failure, because you can get tons of gains, you can get tons of stimulus and effect from just kind of training whatever, especially as you're new. And then as you get a little bit more advanced, you need to dial things in a little bit more. So you'll typically start training closer to failure on average. Again, these are all speaking on averages here, and that's kind of the general gist of it, I would say. Does that kind of make sense?
Absolutely. And I personally really liked the post. At first, like I looked at it and was like, why 5 to 10 reps for a beginner? But then, especially now that you're explaining it, it makes perfect sense. And I think the tricky part with the higher rep range is staying focused and keeping that good form. Like I think as you get, 15
100%.
and beyond, it's like, oh, are we done yet type of thing.
Yes,
And a
yes.
beginner is just gonna try to rush through that. So it does really take an advanced or at least intermediate mindset.
100%. No, I'm glad that you said that because that's another huge part of it. Someone that's new to training, if they don't have really good form and technique, like you said, it starts to hurt. They're just trying to do whatever they can to like get through the rep. Form might break down, maybe slightly more chance to get injured, because you don't have good form and technique. Super valid points. Whereas someone more advanced can keep that form dialed in the whole time, even when it really starts to hurt. And I think to sort of provide some merit to, I think, some of the, I guess, criticism of that post is like, well, if you're training in the higher rep ranges, like you don't really know if you're a couple reps from failure or not. I'm like, actually, I think that's totally true, which is, more as to why, if you're new to training, you probably just want sort of a capped rep range. And you're like, hey, you're just going to train around 8 to 10 reps, because it's a lot easier if you're at 10 to be like, okay, maybe I had one or two more. If you're at 25, you're like, I don't know, I could maybe do five more. But to be frank, it just hurts. It just really hurts. Like, I don't know if I had five, maybe I had 10 more. Who really knows? So there's probably a little bit more to that. It's like, if you're newer, keep the reps on that lower range because it's just going to be a little bit easier to start to dial in, start to hone that. Like, hey, am I actually close to failure or what's going on? And then, like you said, failure is actually, at least how we would define it at RP, is like when your form starts to break down. Like, that's probably actually failure. And as you get more advanced, you're just, like you said, able to keep that good form throughout.
And just one more thing on that post topic question, in regards to the compounds versus more isolation lifts for the advanced, what is your reasoning for more isolation work for the advanced trainee?
So there's a concept, I don't know if, I think Dr. Mike was sort of the one that kind of coined this, stimulus to fatigue ratio. So if you're newer to lifting, you can do compound lifts, squats and deadlifts and all that. And you just don't typically tend to accumulate as much fatigue. And so maybe a good way to think about this fatigue is if you've been someone that's training for a really long time, you're bigger, you're stronger, the amount of weight that you have to use is higher. And so if you do like a really hard set of 10 on the deadlift, Like, let's say you're a muscular man, 200 pounds plus, something like that. It takes a toll on you. It just takes a toll on your body overall. Mentally, physically, you just kind of hurt after. It does not tend to be the case for those newer to lifting. And so as you get more advanced, there is a really good argument to be made that, like, let's say you're really wanting to stimulate your hamstrings. Okay, like you could do deadlifts, but it also is extract, it's accumulating this huge fatigue cost where, you're using every muscle in your body, for, say. And it's like, if you're more advanced, you're like, I really want to target my hamstrings. Maybe you just go and do like a leg curl. You don't get any of that additional cost. You're not working your traps, your arms, your glutes, your lower back, and all this stuff. And it takes a toll on you after a while, especially if you have to use really heavy weights to get an effect. And so there's a really good case to be made for, as you get more advanced, you have the luxury and privilege of being able to use machines more, because you want to kind of focus your efforts in a very targeted way to, like, that particular muscle without accumulating all that other excess fatigue from some of the compound lifts that that comes with it.
That makes a lot of sense to me, and I've personally fallen into that kind of regime by chance, more or less, because I started off with more free weights and compound lifts and so on, and almost used to kind of laughingly look at the machines. Oh yeah, they are inferior. Until I now, a couple of years or 3 years ago, started training in a gym. Like, oh wow, this is amazing, because I can actually give certain body parts a rest and just target other areas a lot more specifically. So yeah, I really, really liked that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, no, what you said, it sums it up in a nutshell right there. Like, you can just be a lot more targeted with things without adding all that additional cost.
And another post that I loved on your page basically just said, if you are inconsistent and you can't say something didn't work. And people listening will know that one of my favorite all-time words is consistency. But nonetheless, people often say, oh, this and that didn't work for me, or this training program didn't work for me. And then you're like, well, were you consistent with it? But yeah, I'm curious what inspired you to write that post.
Probably one of my favorite sayings of all time is just consistency over perfection. So, I was actually able to, pretty well-known speaker, John Acuff. I wasn't super familiar with him until, really recently, but I was able to listen to like a Zoom call that he did yesterday for an hour, and he was kind of alluding to this, where it's like, doing the basics, like, isn't really sexy, and it's really hard to kind of get people to be convinced that, like, that's what it actually takes. Like, usually you need some, like, fancy, complicated thing, and then people are like, oh, okay. And what people really miss is the whole consistency component, like you said. So if you're going to start a program, well, let's say a month later, you're like, no, that didn't really work for me. It's like, okay, well, is 1 month really enough time to even see if it worked? Or And then you have to dig a little bit deeper, and you're like, okay, well, you were supposed to be lifting 3 times a week. How many times were you lifting? And you're like, oh, well, I had to miss, a couple here and there. And you're like, okay, well, now you're not actually following the program. So how do you actually really know if you were actually going to get results from that? So again, that's just where, because there's a whole lot of different ways to get results when it comes to nutrition and or training. And you can have a not very good program, but if you're really consistent with it, like, you're going to get pretty good results over the long term. And so I think a lot of people just kind of miss that whole consistency component in general. And because this is a really interesting topic to dive into, I think it's pretty related to it, is if you take someone that's not really used to fitness, they tend to want to, when they jump in, when they do decide to get going, like, they're all in. They're like, okay, great, I'm going to change everything, I'm doing everything. And so, like, that part's cool and I respect that. But you're like, let's take that. And instead of jumping in and going 100 miles an hour, and then 2 weeks later, you realize you can't do that because you tried to change so much stuff and you just fall off and then you're done basically forever. Like, okay, let's take that energy that you have when you're first starting out here, which is great energy to have. Like, you're excited to get results and all that. Let's just start to do some little stuff, and that's where the consistency comes in, right? Because it's not, you don't have to go all in and change every single thing and everything, every little aspect of your life around fitness has to be perfect. It's like, no, that's probably not the right approach, because no one can sustain that. It's like, let's change these couple things, and you're like 80% of the way there. This other 20%, all right, life happens, no one's perfect, cool. But if you can perform it at that like 80% level, but you can keep doing it for months and years, like you're way better off. And a lot of times people miss that. I don't know. It's because maybe like our culture and all that, people just want really fast results. And unfortunately, that's not how it works. So if you can channel some of that energy into just try to be consistent over months and years, you're probably gonna be way better off.
Yeah, and I think that's probably also the only way that we can really achieve longevity with it as well,
Totally.
which I'm sure is most people's goals as well, to keep lifting or at least being fit until they're in their 70s or 80s even, because I think the research is quite clear on the fact that if we get injured at certain times, or we just have like half a year where we don't do anything and the muscles atrophy, that's way worse than if we consistently go twice per week and dial it down a bit more.
100%. Hopefully people are getting into this for, well, one, and it's okay to look better, but also just generally, if you look better, you're going to have better health as well. And it all kind of ties together. And I've actually, unfortunately seen this a little bit, with some family members, as they've never really been into fitness. And as they just get up there in age, like, get into the hospital, and then you kind of get bedridden for a little bit. And it's really tough to come back for that. So it's always for my, the more proactive you can be with stuff, it's a lot better than being reactive. And so a lot of times people have some like bad health outcome, which kind of forces them into action. And that's being reactive. And you're like, well, let's flip that around. And maybe if we just started being proactive, and you can still be in very good shape from lifting like twice a week. It doesn't have to be the 6 times a week, 1 hour. It's like 30-minute workout a couple times a week. Like you're still going to get a lot of bang for the buck there. And man, I would really love to see more people do that. It's just really hard to convince people to get going.
For sure. And I think to your point of the boring things sometimes being underestimated, you made a point or you made a post about the core benefits of maintenance. And I think that really plays into exactly what we're saying with just being consistent with certain things. But nonetheless, yeah, when it comes to nutrition or so, can you elaborate on why you think maintenance period is actually really, really important and beneficial?
So, there's a whole lot of ways, like we said earlier, to get results, and there's tons of diets that'll get you results, and you can lose weight. Like losing weight's not hard, really. Keeping weight off and, losing fat, right, versus just losing weight, it's a little bit different, a little bit trickier. But where a lot of people miss the mark when it comes to nutrition programs is they're only focused on getting from X to Y. They're like, I just want to lose 20 pounds. And they do that kind of through whatever means possible. And it's like, great, now I reach this goal. Cool. Now what do I do? And a lot of programs out there are like, sorry, we just tell you how to lose weight. You're like, okay, but now what do I do? So again, there's like sort of missing the healthy habits along the way. And then once you finally get there, you just kind of revert back to where you were. It's not so great. So the idea would just be to take it a little bit slower, right? That consistency approach. And then you're hopefully developing some good habits along the way. And then once you're able to lose that weight, you've now built some of those good habits. And then you're able to maintain your end weight a lot easier because you kind of have a program or a plan in place. So most of the time, programs don't have any plan. It's just like, oh, you lost the weight. Cool. Congratulations. Who knows what? But it's like, no. You want to help people along the way, get to where they want to go. And then it's like, great. Now you're here. Well, the diet doesn't really end. Goes a little bit longer because we want to maintain that. And then, of course, part of maintenance is you can relax a little bit. You should be eating a little bit more. You don't have to be as rigid. Generally, when you do all that stuff, it helps reduce like the mental diet fatigue. So when you're dieting, especially in fat loss, especially if it gets really hard, it's just really hard. And it's really hard mentally. Maybe it's a little bit easier now with some like GLP medicines that can help sort of reduce that hunger. But again, it's some people use that, some people don't. So the diet fatigue just from the mental side is a very real thing. And so you want to ease up and do that. And that'll help bring that diet fatigue down when you start to maintain for a while. And yeah, it sort of gives your, it, again, this isn't like metabolic damage or anything like that. But as you diet, metabolism slows down. It's just a natural human thing where it's like, oh, you're eating less. Hey, do you remember that time we almost starved like thousands of years ago? Let's pump the brakes here. There's also some really interesting research that if you watch the RP YouTube channel, Eric Trexler, who is a researcher here at Duke University, went up and hung out with him because I live in North Carolina as well. Not too long ago, I went up and hung out with him for the day, and just basically the body is really, really good at adapting. And so if you're like, hey, I want to lose weight, I'm going to like go super crazy and start doing like 20, 25,000 steps a day. Okay, well, it's a strategy to get there, maybe not be the best one, but your body becomes more efficient as you get more and more used to doing those steps. And so you end up burning fewer and fewer calories along the way because your body's just like, oh, this is what we're doing now. Great. We're going to optimize. We're just going to become really good at it, really efficient. And so there's just a whole lot of things that start to kick in as you lose weight. And so like once you get there, you kind of have to slowly reverse out of those a little bit. And whether you want to like really ease back or if you just want to kind of add in a good amount of food right away, I don't think there's really a right or wrong way to do that. A little bit of that's personal preference. But at the end of the day, you want to give your body and mind a little bit of a rest after losing weight. And then you use those healthy habits to keep going. Maybe you can ha add in some fun foods or something like that every now and again. That's kind of the general idea of maintenance after you reach your goal weight.
I love that, and I think it really is the most underrated time where people can benefit from a coach still, because oftentimes
Yeah, absolutely.
they're, oh, we're done with the reverse diet. Okay, cool. See you later. I don't need a coach anymore. Like, oh, when do you usually fall off track? That's normally when exactly the time where you yo-yo, or you suddenly gain a bunch of weight, or you want to over-restrict again, or so. So I actually think that having a coach for maintenance, and not just for a month, but like for half a year, whatever, can be really, really beneficial for people.
100%. So I used to coach a lot of people. I don't really coach a whole lot of people anymore. But that was always one of the biggest things that I had trouble with because people are paying you for results at the end of the day, and so you're like, well, I want to help them lose weight. And so it took me a while to realize that if you can help them get there, but then if you can maintain after, and again, like part of this is you having to, I don't want to say convince, maybe that's not the right word, but really it is. You're trying to convince them of like, I can get you these results, but if you actually stick around for a couple months after and we can work on the maintenance part together, like now you are understanding what it takes to maintain that. You're able to keep up those habits. You're able to ask any and all these questions. And there's just the added accountability when you work with a coach. So a lot of people pay for that because they want to lose the weight and they want that accountability. They know they have to report to somebody. But why not continue to do that on a maintenance for a while? So I'm 100% with you. I think that's a great idea. If you're working with a coach, like don't necessarily stop right after you reach your, goal after 3 months. It's like add on a little bit, whether it's 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, I'm with you. If people want to do it for 3 to 6 months, I think that's awesome. Cost can, obviously be a factor. But that's actually part of the reason why I like at RP. So we have some coaches. We got like 15 coaches that I work with folks, but also, not everyone can afford coaching. And so it's like, even if you worked with a coach for a while and then like took what you learned and then transitioned into an app that can help you with some of that accountability, and like you have to track, you have to log things. Well, there's a very good case to be made for that as well.
Definitely, like not breaking your streak, and like you said, like entering something somewhere. And maintenance, I think, is such a wonderful period to focus on other things. So, like for example,
Absolutely.
your lifts are probably going to be better, or focusing on sleep or your hormones, or like there is still a lot to be done with a coach or without a coach as well. But yeah, I'm curious because I think in your book, Fit for Success, you speak about all kinds of things, of course, also more specifically when it comes to fat loss for all kinds of people. But what inspired you to write the book, first of all?
Yeah, so the book came out in 2020. I was actually just talking to someone before this call. Coming up next month, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer in January of 2020, which is 5 years ago. Seems crazy. It seems like it just happened, I don't know, not that long ago. So the fact that the whole COVID year was 5 years ago, coming up really soon, is totally crazy. And like my wife's 99.99% back to normal and all that. But so she had that. We had two small kids. We had to start homeschooling them. My wife was going through chemo and all that. It's just like we had all this crap going on in 2020, and I had been reading a bunch, and I had sort of been thinking about like, well, what are the things that really make people successful and stand out? And I was able to work with a bunch of high-level athletes, and then just reading a bunch and kind of tying the overall themes together. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And then 2020 happened. My wife's going through all that. COVID's happening. Our kids are homeschooled. Like, it's just pure chaos. And I was like, oh, let's actually put some of this stuff into practice and see if it worked. And so that was really like the root cause of writing the book. Also, we were quarantined because this is if we go back in time, it's like March of 2020 now, and like no one knew what in the world was going on with COVID. Like people were, my wife's going through treatment, so we had to be extra super cautious as well. So I knew I literally wasn't going anywhere for months, and I'm like, well, I need something to do. I'm gonna maybe write a book. Because I had sort of a rough outline in my head, put it all out on paper, started writing. So, yeah, it was sort of like a personal project as well that, gave me, something to do during all that. So that was really the core root cause of why I wrote the book. And the goal was to get it out before the end of 2020, and it came out November of 2020.
Amazing. Well, super cool. I mean, congratulations. First of all, it's always a huge achievement, I can imagine, to, well, complete any task that we set ourselves out to do, but a book more importantly. And with your work with high level athletes and with observing them and so on, what's some of the common traits that you have seen amongst that trait of people or that kind of people?
So there's two that stand out to me. One is just the sheer amount of work that they put in. I don't think people necessarily realize that. Like you can put in a lot of work and get to like being good. And then it takes a lot more to get to great. And then it takes a whole heck of a lot more to reach that like upper echelon, top tier, 1% of your sport or even, 0.1. So like for example, we work with some top weightlifters that go on to compete at the Olympics and medal at the Olympics and whatnot. And these people will train for like 3 to 4 hours a day most days of the week, like usually 5 to 6 times a week. Like that's like 20 hours of training a week. And then you think about it, and it's like, well, they're also dialing in their nutrition and they're taking the right steps for recovery. It's like your life has to revolve around that. So just the sheer amount of work that people put in is outstanding, and I don't think people realize that. For example, CrossFit Games champions, same thing. They're training multiple times a day. They're training for, 4, sometimes 5 hours a day. I mean, their life really is dedicated to that. I don't think people necessarily realize that. They're just like, oh, they have really good genetics. And it's like, yes, not denying that. Genetics is a big part of it, but just the sheer amount of work that they have to put in to get to that top level of their respective sport is pretty mind-blowing. And then the second one is really interesting, and it comes around the idea of discipline. And sometimes I think people we have this, I guess, like false assumption of how the top athletes are the best in the world. I could say, oh, well, it's genetics, right? And it's like, well, they never have bad days, and they just love what they do. And you're like, okay, that's actually not true. They're human like anyone else. They have days where they feel beat up. They have where they don't want to go. They don't want to do it. And so the common theme was, and I asked this to numerous people, from some of the weightlifters, CrossFit Games champions, and they were just like, you know what? Yeah, there's totally those days, but here's what we do. We just kind of show up and just kind of get started. And then they get started, and like, you know how it is. Maybe you start warming up, you're riding the bike, you're walking on the treadmill, the endorphins get flowing, you're like, oh, I start to feel a little bit better. And then you start warming up, you start to feel even better. And then lo and behold, you knock that workout out, or you knocked out your training session. Like you got in what needed to get done. And it's just that like one little simple step, like just the next step. They're not thinking of like the next workout and what needs to happen weeks and months. It's like, no, you're gonna have bad days. It's just go, just get started, see what happens. And yeah, like they all said that. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. So it's like the best people in the world have bad days too. In fact, they probably have lots of them, but sometimes they just go and they get what needs to be done regardless of how they feel. And so a lot of times people sort of be dictated by their feelings and they're like, oh, I don't feel like doing it. So, well, if your goal is to be one of the best, kind of can't pay that much attention to your feelings, like to a certain extent. I know. Yeah. It depends, of course, but top people and the champions, they're just disciplined and they do what it takes.
That I think that's a really great takeaway for anyone listening, whether they have
Yeah.
high aspirations or low, just to focus on the immediate step in front of you and to show up. I have had clients with whom, kind of like according to the Atomic Habits book as well, if they just struggle to get into a routine with the gym, we literally initially just said, Just drive there. I don't even care if you go in. They're like, for this week, your goal is just to drive there. You can turn around. I don't care. And then the next week, perhaps 5 minutes of stretching or walking on the treadmill. I don't care, but like establishing that I'm going to show up no matter what.
Yeah. Ah, it's great points. Just establishing that little bit of routine and consistency around, oh, this wasn't too bad. Oh, I thought it was a 20-minute drive to my gym. Oh, turns out it's only, 10. That's a lot easier. I mean, even with something like that, it's like, well, you don't even have to go to the gym. You just go for a little walk. I mean, because again, we were talking about COVID earlier. I mean, there used to be a thing where we were telling people, like, you don't even need to have fancy weights. Like, throw a backpack on, do some body weight squats, like, do some burpees. Like, just do something. And you do something, you're probably going to feel a lot better. And then typically, what happens is you start to feel better about yourself. And you're like, oh, again, it creates some positive momentum. And you're like, oh, well, I kind of like that. Well, I might do it again. And just, yeah, the consistency element of it, just doing a little bit, just trying to show up and just get something done usually leads to some pretty positive results.
And I think in terms of like habit creation, I mean, we've given people some tips there when it comes to training. Is there something, let's say someone listening might say, I have attempted to lose weight, to do a diet, et cetera, so many times on my own. What can I do in this new year to make it different, aside from working with a coach? What would be something that, like, parallel to what we just said about training, that someone could take action on when it comes to nutrition?
Yeah, I think it's just trying to find something that you like doing. Like, for some people, it might be, they're scared of the thought of going to the gym, especially on the female side. It tends to be more common. They're like, well, I don't want to go to the gym, right? It's kind of scary. There's a lot of, like, big sweaty guys in there, and, like, it's totally true. So maybe you start with just going and, like, walking on the treadmill, and then you just kind of look around, you sort of get used to it, you see some people, maybe people smile, say hi, and you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then, maybe you can start with some machines. I know that seems slightly counterintuitive to what we said earlier, but it's like, just find something that you like. Maybe it's even going to a class. Maybe it's going to, like, a boot camp class where, like, oh, hopefully there's some element of weightlifting in there. Maybe it's something like CrossFit, which combines cardio and lifting. Just try to find something that that you like doing, and it's probably going to make it a lot easier on you. I would say another thing is to try to find some like-minded people, and sometimes it's really hard to do with people, like, locally in person. I've been asked that question a number of times, so I'm like, well, it's kind of why we have, like, social media. That's why it exists. Like, you can go find a group of people that like just about anything nowadays. Hop in their circle, see what these people are saying, what they're doing, what they're talking about, and you're gonna hear people just like yourself talking about victories, talking about their, failures, all that stuff. Like, it's probably just good to be around positive, supportive people that are interested in things that you like as well.
Yeah, I think that's such an undervalued point as well. Like, I don't know the exact quote, but if you want to adapt a new habit, going somewhere where that desired habit is the norm or is what everyone is striving for, makes it so much easier than being surrounded by your friends that drink a bunch on the weekend and that
Totally.
criticize you for trying to lose some weight. And yeah, I think that's a really a great recommendation to look for that community aspect, really. And I think at RP Strength, that's probably one of your guys' goals as well, to like have people identify themselves as, hey, we're part of this.
Yeah, totally. And that's why we've got, like, a huge Facebook group where people can go in, they can talk about, really anything diet and training related. They can talk about recipes, they can talk about, yeah, their wins, their losses, their anything. And it's like, well, you start to see that stuff every day, and social media is, it'll recognize what you start to look at, and it'll start to show you more of that. And then all of a sudden, like, it just seems like that's the only thing you're seeing. You're like, oh, this is cool. Like, oh man, it's like, it seems like everyone's into this. And it's like, well, yeah, because that's what social media is feeding you. But yeah, it's probably gonna help.
Yeah, and having people around you that are further along in the journey, I think that
Sure.
helps with anything. If you're a coach listening to this, if you are someone who's new to training or whatever, it doesn't matter. Having those that are a little bit further
Absolutely.
ahead in the journey can always be helpful. And I think one thing I have learned and seen firsthand in this industry is that people are so happy to help. Like, sometimes you just have to speak out and be like, hey, I'm struggling with this lift, or hey, is anyone else experiencing that? And then 10 hands go up and everyone's like, well, I thought I was the only one. That's so cool that you feel the same way.
Absolutely. It's okay to be a little vulnerable, especially around people that are like-minded, because yeah, that is. So if we go back to the example where someone's scared to go to the gym and go into the big scary weight room, a lot of times those people are really nice, and sometimes those scary looking people are sometimes the nicest folks out there, and they're like, oh hey, I'd love to show you around, or like, oh hey, if they ask you a question on form or technique, you'd be like, oh, like, hey, you're doing a really good job, hey, maybe here's one little thing you could tweak. And but again, I get it. It's scary if I walked into something that I didn't know anything about. I don't know, like a mechanic class. Like I'd be scared to ask questions too. So like I get it. But hopefully, people listening can, just try to knock down some of those barriers, I guess, and don't be afraid to ask some questions.
For sure. And Yannick, as we're recording this towards the end of the year, people are not going to listen to it until the beginning of the year. But nonetheless, I'm really curious to hear what you're excited about in 2025 personally, but also for RP strength.
So for RP, we have some like big app updates coming, especially to our diet app. So kind of, I would say basically a complete overhaul. Right now, it's like it's a little bit more rigid. You kind of have to use it more as like a planning tool. It's not really like a logger, it's not like a food tracker. And this will give people a lot more flexibility around that, so you can just be more flexible. And we know real life happens, and people want to change stuff, move some macros around, sub one thing for another. Like, it's just give people more flexibility. Just more and more updates on the RP Hypertrophy app. So it's an app I use literally every single day of my life. I love it. Just continue to make that better. That's what I'm super excited about. Continued content on YouTube. It's a big area of focus for us. So Dr. Michael keep putting out tons of content there. Personal side, probably some trips with with my family, and just trying to hang out with my family a little bit more, not just like my immediate family, wife and kids, but maybe try to see my parents a little bit more. And hopefully, my wife and I went on a trip to Italy last year, so hopefully we can go on some other like fun trip, something like that. Maybe not as big as going to Italy, but do something.
Awesome. That sounds like you have an amazing year ahead of you. And yeah, I mean, I love hearing
Knock on wood.
that RP strength is continuing to, well, be consistent with everything that you guys are
Exactly.
doing, but also be consistent with keeping up with the times and making sure that you are always providing the best possible service for your clients. So I love it.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It comes down to the consistency part. So once you find stuff that works, just try to keep doing it. And that's no real secret there. But if you can keep doing that over the long term, not just days and weeks, but months and years, you'll probably be pretty well off.
I think that's a really great place to leave people with, in the sense of consistency being the main motto. And Nick, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. I will make sure to link everything in the show notes, your
Awesome.
Instagram handle, but of course also everything RP Strength related and your book, of course, also. So thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Nick. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.